You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Don't do coke in the bathroom.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from D's World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, professor of criminal psychology and author, Peter Sacco. And now your host. With Len here, Catholics are giving something up for a week to be more Christ-like. He just wished that this time around they would choose to give up pedophilia. Dees Casillas.
Yo, this is Dees.
Hello, this is C-3PO, Human-Cyborg Relations.
C-3PO? What are you doing calling me? Man, I gotta tell you, I am a big fan of those three movies you were in.
I beg your pardon, I have been in 10, actually, sir.
There have been three Star Wars movies, that's it. Okay, fine, I'll give you Rogue One, but if you even mention any of the others, I will turn you into Bantha fodder.
Oh, goodness, well, I never.
So, what's up? Why are you calling me?
I'm here to translate a phone call.
Oh, okay, from who?
May I present to you the illustrious Bibi the Hutt.
Uta Kuta podcaster.
Benjamin Netanyahu? Holy shit! I thought I felt a cold chill in here. What are you doing calling me?
Kauka na kuta kania uakau.
His Exaltedness has requested that you stop saying anti-Semitic remarks on your show, or he'll do to you what they did to those towers on 9/11.
Whoa! You were involved in 9/11?
Kauka tutu mabati orakola.
Not that you can prove.
Okay, listen, I've never said anything anti-Semitic on this podcast. I have no hatred towards Jewish people. But as a nation state currently, the Likud party, Benjamin Netanyahu, and extreme Zionists have really made it hard to support them. I mean, Miriam Adelson is giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to get Thomas Massie unelected because he's running on transparency in the Epstein files. Why is she so invested in that? Not to mention the whole Gaza thing. And, I mean, clearly they've been puppeteering our government with all the wars that have been going on. And not to mention also, Miriam Adelson giving Trump over $100 million for his re-election. I mean, that doesn't come without strings attached. And also, don't make me say her name a third time, or I'm pretty sure she crawls out of a staticky TV upside down and tries to kill me.
Laknuka patia patuar akaruka otakaki mana.
His Highness claims those are all completely unrelated incidents. Purely coincidence.
I mean, okay, it seems pretty clear they're not. So, if I asked you, point blank, are you controlling our political system at all? What would you say?
Kamuka takitu raknupa lakitu chu no mukakuru ara uwa lakimano uanitu ara Clinton okatira kutu Biden uno chakita no kopakira antachali Kirk akutu akutana Dick Cheney mukura kalitano pakaru tinu janakakisa turapa Vietnam arukuputia Technoraktak, Irakuku, Iran, Villain, Venezuela, Tuchik, Mako, Ropo, Aketu, Nikotorak, Pa, Koatua.
He said, no.
That's all he said? And that?
Yes. Now, if you'll excuse us, Jeffrey has arrived for our daily pizza party.
Wait, what?
Oh, nothing. We have to go.
Wait, C-3PO, one last question. I've always wanted to know. You and R2-D2,
yes, and I was the bottom.
Malam Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Guys, what is up? Thanks for coming back for another episode of the show. We appreciate you being here, appreciate you hanging out. We have had a successful 2026 so far, almost, every single week. I'm still traveling, still busy, guys, so we're doing most weeks for you. I know those of you that have been with us for years, this show, we were so good at weekly, even bi-weekly for a long time, and now we're most weeks. I feel like 3 out of 4 weeks of the month for a free show is great. If you don't like it, you can send me some money on Venmo and I'll get you a 4 show. No problem. I'll make sure you get your 4 show. Until then, you can't complain, guys, but we're glad you're here. We got a good show lined up for you. As usual, if you like what you hear, tell a friend, rate us on your favorite podcasting listening device and all that good stuff, guys. Before we get into it with our guest today, a couple announcements. I will be at Woodlawn Comedy Club on the Friday the 27th in San Antonio, Texas, and I will be at Upstage Comedy Lounge on the 28th in San Antonio, Texas, as well as Bandera Brewery on Saturday, March 7th, and a bunch of other dates coming up, guys. We've got the Drinking Debate, which is coming to Mic Drop Comedy Club in San Diego, Mic Drop Comedy Club in Chandler, Arizona, a bunch of other stuff in California, Arizona we're doing too. We're adding those to the calendar soon, so check the calendar. Tickets are already selling for these things, so get in there, check it out, and going a lot of places this year. I took a little bit of time off last year. We're hitting it again pretty hard this year. We got a lot of dates hitting a lot of states we haven't been to in a couple years, so come see me, guys. And as for the comic book, Killstand number 4, the pre-launch page is up. We've got the links everywhere. Go to inferno.earth on Instagram or the website. Hit the notify me of launch for that. That helps us climb the algorithms when we do launch on March 16th. So keep an eye out for that. But the more followers, the better when we launch. So check that out, guys. You can get number 1 through 3 are available now on the website, or just hit me up and we will get you some books, man. I will also be at Texoma Comic Con in Durant, Oklahoma this weekend. And then something in Texas, the 27th through the 29th. I don't remember where that is. I think I'm doing stand-up comedy there also, though. So just hit the Instagrams. We'll figure it out, guys. Just you know where to go. Anyway, that's it for the announcements. We're going to get into it with our guest today. He is a professor, a filmmaker, a writer, and so much more. We're going to talk to him about all that. Please welcome to the show, Peter Sacco, everyone.
Pleasure to be here, Deese, and everybody listening. Hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful day and weekend.
Yeah, thanks for being here, man. We spoke the other day via Facebook I was looking for some guests and you replied. You're very some interesting beats in what you do, not to take away from other things you do. But the criminal psychology thing really grabbed my eye. You were a professor of criminal psychology, is that right?
That is correct, sir. I did it for 25 to 27 years, I think it was.
Wow.
So yeah, basically retired from it. Been a psychologist, so the two go hand in hand. Basically retired from all the above. So as you said, I like to write, I like to make film stuff, and seeing that you're a comedian, I've written nondescript agreement screenplays in comedy, so I absolutely love it. It's my catharsis.
Yeah. I've been doing it for almost 20 years. It's not bad. It's better than any day job I had before this. So, so psychologist, that means you can prescribe pharmaceuticals, right?
No, I can't.
No,
a psychiatrist can. A psychologist, all we can prescribe basically is a new way of thinking.
Okay. So you want the one that works, right? You want the drugs. No. That's what everyone wants these days. They don't want to fix themselves. They just want a pill that fixes it for them, you know?
Well, you're absolutely right. I wrote a book, it's got to be 20 years ago. Well, close to it. Fast Food Dating Your 2 Cents, which was basically the same premise of how it has evolved, just with that whole thing. Nowadays it's just like, pull out your cell phone, boom, let's get myself a date quickly. I don't want to wait to even meet anybody and spend the time. It's just like, let's go.
Yeah, everything's instant. You know, it's like, let's, I'll just take this pill, inject myself with this. I'll do, you know, God forbid we take a moment and try to actually figure out the cause, the root cause, instead of just plugging holes and symptoms, you know.
And you know, the irony of it is, as a comedian, question I have for you as a psychologist, as you have, you found even individuals can't even be, are less in touch now with their comic self, so to speak, with their senses of humor, that it's almost like, it's like watered down. It's like almost going from a fully lubed up caffeinated espresso to now it's almost like a decaf Swiss water coffee.
Yeah, I could tell you why. It starts with kind of the PC agenda that kicked in about a decade ago. That's where it started. And you've been around long enough and done enough things that you understand we also have very big swings when it comes to everything, whether culture, politics, etc. So the PC culture neutered people to the point where people quit, or we really took the teeth out of comedy, or we, you know, have to say unhoused instead of homeless, you know, when it's the same fucking word. It's like, so it, that neutered it and distilled it down to like this, you know, very gentle thing. And then also it's kind of become fractured now, because as it's swinging back, people are also only trying to do one thing, and it's get a viral clip, which means being as sensational as possible, as quickly as possible, but not really having a lot of nuance. So we're going the other direction now, which is, I don't know if it's as bad, but it's certainly not great for the art form, in my opinion.
Well, what's interesting, Deese, as I said, I've been a professor, and you brought up the whole wokeism sort of, you know, everything's politically correct.
Right.
Supposed to be. So I started out roughly as a professor. I will go really conservative, and I'm going to say 1996, 97.
Okay.
And I started out in communications and relationships. So we went from a really interesting, just in the whole psychology field, where when I started as a psychologist, it was a patient, then it became a client, then it became a consumer,
right,
of mental health services. So I was like, are you kidding me? And then you'd actually get corrected.
Right.
But this gets even better for me, because I would say, bar none, I've been just one institute literally, in a pleasant way, beat me to a pulp with the extravagance of political correctness, where I once got written up because I referred to a serial killer, an individual that had been abducting young school-age girls,
right,
murdered them and dismembered them. And because I referred to this individual as a piece of crap to society,
yeah,
a student got so offended that the serial killer didn't have any rights.
Right.
And this turned into an inquest into whether or not I was being too difficult on serial killers like John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Like, those guys never get a fair shake in life, you know? So
that's where I noticed the crux of it, Deese, where, yeah, I thought, something is way off base here, where we're actually defending Charlie Manson. We're defending some of the worst serial killers that you can possibly imagine, like Leonard Lake, that was actually putting, you know, his victims through a wood chipper. Hence, that's where basically Fargo got the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got approached. Like, I literally had to relinquish, turn over my notes that were based on the fact that I was being too difficult on certain types of serial killers because of their DSM, we were still in the DSM-3. It was shifting into the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual 3, which is the medical Bible for psychiatric problems. And then it was evolving into the 4th. And I had to turn over my notes. And it was almost like, okay, Pete, we hate to have to do this, but where are you getting some of your notes from? Because these are not good. They're not accurate.
Right.
And then I said, well, ironically, this was the textbook you prescribed to me that's based on Masters and Johnson and Kinsey. So, yeah, you're right. We do have a problem. And my problem, I said, the best way to propose this is, if it really is a problem and if you folks are offended by it, you need to go and offer every single one of your student that has come through and taken that course and bought that textbook a full refund.
Right, right. Yeah, because your question...
I said, you gave it to me, and you guys created the syllabus, and you created the entire objectives for the course as well as the course, and I was just teaching your course. So you tell me, what do we do here? These, I saw so many, this looked like a hologram, this director of the school, their face turned red every color because they didn't know how to answer that. And I got there, they were caught in the headlights. Like, what do you want to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you laid it out perfectly for him. Like, this is not, you know, I didn't come up with this. I didn't write this. I didn't, you know, I'm not the one who published these textbooks. These are the ones I've been given as a professor that everyone's been using. And now you're, you know, you've decided to alter this and decide what's, you know, really it's, I mean, I imagine you've experienced it so much because it's so pervasive in college campuses, this kind of woke thing that happened. And, you know, I mean, I hate even saying woke anymore because it feels hack because it's been, you know, it's like this, like, it's like saying, calling someone a Nazi in America now. It's like lost its teeth, you know, like, but it is a thing that happened where we just, people decided they needed to control language because that controls people. And that gives people the opportunity to correct you. And I think that's a big part of it too. It's people that don't have power anywhere else in their universe. So they decide that, well, I do have power here and I can tell you you're wrong in this language. I mean, it's gotten so crazy. I don't know if you saw the story in Canada where there's a trans shooter this last week in Canada. So the Canadian news would not, they kept referring to them as a gun person. Like, they wouldn't even label them beyond that, just like the gun person. Like a gun person. That is the craziest description of what this person is, you know? I'm like, I'm not, like, you don't have to, if we're not saying what they are anymore, like, what is a gun person? What does that even mean, you know?
Well, my issue with that is, because I train cops, or individual cops that are already sworn in, mm-hmm. as well as students that wanted to be in law enforcement, policing, customs, immigration. And at one point, because I watched part of this press conference where they were referring this as a woman because the person had a dress and that's what they wanted to be referred as, a woman. Mm-hmm. So rule number one, and some of my bestest friends are cops, as well as military folks. And one of the worst things that you can ever do is either impersonate a police officer, that's a cardinal sin, or claim valor as a soldier and you were never a soldier.
Right.
Because what that is, that's misrepresentation. Basically, impersonation is like a major blasphemy.
Yeah.
So question I threw out there, and I challenged this to some of the folks in that police service, so to speak. If you have no problems then referring to a guy that you know is a guy, biologically a guy, that's their ID, and that person is impersonating a woman, you better relinquish this idea of impersonating a cop, because anybody now should be able to impersonate a cop and not be in trouble for it.
Right. Identity becomes very fluid. I mean, and here's the thing I would pose to a police officer too. Like, let's say this person, because I think they, did they kill themselves? The person, the shooter?
Yep.
So yeah, let's say they didn't and they went on and they got away and the police were on their tail trying to find this person. If you were calling it in to the to for so other people could look for him that didn't see him, right? Would you be like, we're searching for a 17-year-old woman? Or would you say a man? Because if you said a woman, exactly, a lot of people would walk right by the this guy and be like, well, that's not them because they said it was a woman. You're like, well, or do you stop and ask everyone, I'm sorry, do you identify as a woman? Because we have to know if we're looking for a woman. So if you identify as one, you might be a suspect. It's like, no, this is why we have language and identifiers and things, so we can identify things in this world. Like, if you want to be trans, if you want to say you're a woman, if you want to act as a woman, if you want to dress as a woman, if you're a consenting adult, I can go nuts. Do whatever you want, I guess. I don't really care. But there is a thing when you force it upon all of us to live in this imaginary land also with you, you know?
But from a police perspective, it is so unethical to even take that approach. And I spoke with several cop friends of mine that are retired, and we all said the same thing. So years and years ago, I would train cops. I would work with cops in the morality unit, which is a policing concept for basically prostitution, John sweeps, that kind of stuff. If you arrested somebody, and it would happen sometimes where this guy was dressed up as a a transvestite. Mm-hmm. And this was really common. In fact, I did a movie or a documentary based on a book called The Madonna Complex, which is now an award-winning film. And you can actually find it on my YouTube channel, Historical Niagara TV Show. It's called The Madonna Complex. And what this is, Deez, there are some guys that are married or very presenting themselves as straight acting, but they're curious with having sexual relations with the same sex. Mm-hmm. So they will actually go look for a she-male. So if they get caught, or within their own way of thinking, they will say, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm not gay. I didn't know.
Right.
And I know this has happened because I've had cops that have made arrests. And sometimes they've even picked up a guy that they're doing a prostitution sweep, so to speak. And the woman they wind up arresting is actually a guy.
Yeah.
Transvestizing as a woman. So when they bring that person in, and I've been in the car with the cops when we, you know, when they brought the person in for booking, when they take that person's ID, even though they're dressed up as a woman, guess who they get charged as? The person on their ID.
Right, right.
And so I've had this conversation with cops, and they want to know the same thing too. Since when did actual police booking and police training at police colleges actually change? So is everything then, Deez, that was taught in the past irrelevant now?
Yeah.
It's not true?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's like these people who in, you know, say California, for instance, is a great example. You have people who like go in, you guys that get arrested, and then they're like, oh, I'm trans. And then they get put in the women's prison. And it's like, yeah, isn't that the easiest thing to do as like a guy? If you get arrested and you're going to prison in California, just say you're trans, you know, you'll get put in the women's prison. And that then you got a real easy road to hoe.
it's, you know, as a Christian man, you know, it's a biblical teaching that as we progress, you know, I'm not going to say when end days are. Nobody knows but God. You know, as they say, God only knows. But, you know, it's always been prophesied that as we get closer to them, what has been called good will start to be called bad. And what is called bad will be seen as good. And what is perverse will actually be seen as normal. And what is normal will be called perverse. And I challenge anybody, show me this is not what's happening right now. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look back on history, most major civilizations before their collapse, one of the last things you see happening is a lot of like trans, gay, trans, to basically take over the culture. And then it soon just kind of collapses. That's one of the last things that happened in, you know, most societies that have been very strong over the thousands of years, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? I got nothing wrong with what they want, you know, what they want to do in private, or what a straight person wants to do in private, what a bisexual wants to do in private, what a homosexual person wants to do in private. That's fine. But leave it out of the damn schools and kids, because that's where, as a psychologist, you know, people go, well, it's not harmful. You're damn right. It is harmful. It's the opposite. Because I've seen these. I've gotten to sit down with the victims. I've gotten to sit down with the individuals that are suicidal who have tried to kill themselves. But, you know, when these people that are the armchair quarterbacks, they have an opinion on everything, but yet they're never in the front lines to see what it actually is. I would challenge them next time, if they want to go and, you know, preach from their pulpit, come and stand on the top of a bridge or a building with me and talk that 18-year-old off of there that wants to kill themselves, or the person that's about to kill themselves. I want a phone call, and it's my duty back in the day to try to talk them out of it. I'll tell you, it is not fun. It is not pleasant. And when I've gotten down to a root of it, there is so much identity confusion, even individuals who have been sexually molested from such a young age that as they're older, they don't know what they are. They're having fantasies about the same sex, but they don't want to be that because they think it's wrong. And then when I find out, you know, the one fellow years and years ago, one of my first cases, it was because he was being molested from the time he was 4 till the time he was 12.
Yeah.
And this is what, you know, I don't see healthy people coming out of, for the most part, really dysfunctional, bad situations, especially where they're told young, really young, you're not really a boy, you're a girl.
Yeah.
Or you're not really a girl, you're a boy, or you're neither. A kid should not have that weight or burden placed on them. Yeah. They should just be kids and get to be kids and go through life, their own journeys, and then at the end decide, hey, this is what I want to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been so pervasive in today's culture that it almost is like trendy, you know, where there's so many kids trying to just, it's like the new Jenko jeans or something like that, you know. It's like the new thing that kids want to be and be part of the culture, because everyone has to like be a thing now, you know. I mean, you deal with this a lot. Like, it seems like everyone is neurodivergent and they wear it on their sleeve, and they need to be, because then they have an excuse to you know, be flaky or not make it through something or not. It's like, you know, no, like, it's called life. We all have anxiety. We all get depressed at times, you know. I understand there's probably some clinical thing where some people have extreme versions of that. But I think it's just an ability to be like, hey, look, I also have this thing. So now I can be part of the crew that people feel sorry for. And I have like this emotional currency that gets me something in my tribe, you know.
You know, if we go back to the DSM, I brought it up. You can go back to the original DSMs, let's say 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. And what were considered mental health disorders are no longer in these other newer ones. And
is that because those have gone away, or is it because they've become more... have they gone away because we've advanced what we know as mental disorders, or have they gone away because we've pandered to people to let them feel how they want to feel?
They became what we would call normal.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
And so,
like, can you give me an example of one that was...
Okay, so once again, you go back to sexuality, human sexuality.
Okay.
Homosexuality used to be considered a mental illness. You could actually be in prison. You could be killed. And in fact, in some societies, I won't name them, in countries, if you practice homosexuality and it's known, they'll kill you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, people are just naive if they don't believe that is true. I remember a student bringing that up in a, you know, I mentioned it in a class. This is going 15, 20 years ago. And a student said, well, no, that can't be right. And I just happen to have a student from that particular part of the world that says, no, sure, the prof is right, because you would get killed. And if you were that in my family, my father and my mother would disown me. And if they didn't disown me, they could potentially want to kill me.
Yeah.
And if you look back at it, they were at one point considered psychiatric problems.
Okay.
Okay. But then what was happening, if you look at the history of it, you would find that individuals that were practicing homosexuality were in positions of power themselves that had gotten caught, or their kids. Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden, it's like, let's not make this a mental health disorder, which, you know, I don't believe it is anyways, so to speak. It's a choice. You're making a lifestyle choice.
Right.
So if you go to Masters and Johnson and Kinsey studies, they'll say, you know, you've got bisexual, homosexuality, and of course, heterosexuality, which are your primary sexual preferences. There's the three. And notice the term, these preferences, which means you have a choice, free will choice to pick
sure.
which way you want to act. So therefore, this is how you get around the fact that it's not a mental illness, because once again, it's a lifestyle choice. So this is where the slippery slope could come to. So there was an individual I remember, and it's been ongoing now. And what really rocked my world about 3 or 4 years ago with the drag queen storytelling and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because I've spoken to clients that have been traumatized by that, especially where they've come from a family where the mother was actually, you know, single mother. She hooks, you know, meets a guy, gets together, and this guy has a whole lifestyle that she is not aware of, to finally she comes home and catches him as a pedophile dressing up as a woman and doing this stuff. And I know this all too well, because I know the case well, because it was somebody I knew.
Yeah.
So if we look at that there, this is how the legitimacy of trying to say, okay, pedophilia is not a mental illness, but rather a lifestyle choice. And this is where I get worried, where I can see, okay, they're trying to downplay it and make it not as bad, but rather make it acceptable. But this is how it's done. It's like you get a little bit of a foothold in something. Like you first drip, 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 get a foothold. And then as you become more aware, desensitized to it, then it becomes a stronghold where it's generally acceptable. And if we go back into society where there used to be that taking place, where it was, I hate to say it, normal in some societies. And I see it as the furthest thing from being normal, because I've actually sat in with units, policing units that worked in pedophilia with child molestation and all that stuff. So I've seen it. I've worked with the victims, and I've also worked with the perpetrators. And the irony of this is, Dees, the perpetrators themselves used to tell me, I know what I'm doing, Doc, is absolutely wrong. I hate myself for it. And if I could kill myself, I've actually considered myself, I would kill myself for it.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, they're actually telling you what I'm doing is wrong. And this is going back 15, 20 years ago. Now we've created this, okay, well, maybe it's not as bad. Maybe this is just society expressing themselves. It's artistic. So my question has been, and I put this out there, and I can't get an answer. If that is so cool for men to dress up as women, why don't I see women dressing up as men and entertaining kids?
Yeah, yeah. You think there'd be something on the other side.
And you know what it is? Here's the funny part of this, Dees. There is what we would refer to as the mother lion or the mother bear syndrome, where it's innate within a woman to actually know, I don't want that around my kids, because right. I will kill that guy if he touches my kids.
Right, right.
So therefore, she's going to be thinking, I don't know if you want to say it consciously or unconsciously, I am not going to dress up as some freaking guy, some idiotic guy, and going and doing storytelling to kids, young kids dressed up as a man, because A, it would confuse them. B, I know there's going to be mothers pissed off with that. And I wouldn't do, you know, I would be pissed off if somebody did it to my kids. So anybody listening to this, if you can't see that paradox there, I don't know what more to say. Whereas basically for the rule of thumb, women just don't go do that stuff.
So why, and I agree with you, but I guess I was just sitting here thinking about this. Why do you think it is that mothers let this happen to their kids then? If they wouldn't go do that, why are they letting it happen to their kids?
We could spend hours on that. we really could.
Yeah.
A part of it is, and I believe that there's been some indoctrination that has gone on with regards to making what is abnormal normal. Mm-hmm. I think here's, and this is just my opinion because I've been in music for a long time as well too, in film, where if you start to introduce something as art, mm-hmm, and you present it as art, then it's just not, and this is where you get to the fine line. Is it perverse or is it not perverse?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we can look at commercials. If you went back, I remember a commercial where individuals got so upset because a man was in the bathtub with his young son, and it was for some soap commercial.
Okay.
And that was 25 years ago, I believe. Yeah. And I remember women that I knew were up in arms about it. They had said, that is totally wrong. It's sending the wrong message.
Right. Yeah. It would be weird, but if it was like an AutoZone commercial. That might not make, maybe that wouldn't be the best. But yeah, like a soap commercial makes more sense.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it. I saw the commercial and I just thought, okay, it's a dad with his child. He loves his kid.
Right.
And here's the part now. We can come at this from psychologically speaking, okay? If a normal person was looking at that Deese, they would just basically say, that is a dad having a bath with his kid because he loves his child. And, you know, if a mother was in the bathroom, in the bathtub with her son or daughter, same age, people wouldn't be up in arms. So is that the problem? Or rather, is it becoming a perverse interpretation of the problem?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, To try to like play devil's advocate, I would say there's a disproportionate amount of male sex offenders compared to female sex offenders. So that's
huge.
That's so maybe this and I'm not saying people are watching this commercial and doing that calculation in their head, but I think there is like an innate thought, you know, with like deeply coded in our DNA that you know, in the power structure of humanity, that men are more powerful and men probably are much more likely to commit that type of crime. So maybe that's the only reason. I wouldn't look at that commercial and make that jump, but also, you know this very well. There's a whole cottage industry based around finding things that people can be mad about. You know, like that, yeah. That is a literal, like, I mean, this is not hyperbole we're getting into. There's literally people's jobs. This is their job to find, to go back in the history of famous people and try to find some sort of tweet that they did in the last two decades that might be unfavorable given what they're doing now. And it's just leverage, you know, it's just leverage to use against these people. And it's gross. It's gross because that's your job. Like, ugh. And like, we all haven't said dumb shit in the last 20 years. I'm saying dumb. I said dumb shit on Facebook today. You know, like, but there's just no room for error. There's no room for forgiveness. There's no room for growth. And it's just like, we want to find a reason to pin you to the wall because it makes us look righteous, you know?
And you see, why I've gone these areas is just to show you, and you're actually saying it, and I was using all this almost as an example, it all is based on psychology, which is based on perception.
Right, sure.
Which, at the end of the day, whatever our perception is, Deese, that's our reality. And whatever our reality is, that's what we believe in. And no matter what people tell us, if we're not ready to hear it, we don't want to hear it, or we're so rooted in our own perspective, that's what it becomes. Like, you know, I've had people come at me, they go, well, how does that work out, Doc? If you're a Christian and a psychologist, how can you be accepting of, you know, what certain people are doing? And at the end of the day, my answer always is because God gave us all the gift of free will, and we get to run our own races. We get to choose what we want to do. And that's just between you and him.
Yeah.
Unless you're harming children or victimizing people, then it's a problem for all of us. But if you're not doing that, I really don't care what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, I think really, you know, perception is reality, but also we validated that too much sometime around, oh, I don't know when it was, probably about 8 years ago, but it could have been 12, you know, this phrase, my truth, came into the lexicon. It became ubiquitous, you know, in our culture. And I remember the first time I heard it, and I'm like, we are cooked. The game is over. The moment you, there is not, because there is objective truth, and then there is how you feel about it, but it doesn't mean it's your truth. It just means how you feel about the truth. You know, we can feel differently about the truth. That is fine. That's going to happen. We're wired differently. We have different ideals, belief systems, etc. We're going to feel different about the truth. But we cannot, if we're arguing about objective truth, we have absolutely lost the plot.
Well, see, you're absolutely correct on the timing. It happened around 2016, 2017.
Okay, yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
And I pointed this out, and I told a whole whack of folks close to me, and even back I did interviews, where I said there's a huge disparity that is occurring right now. And I honestly do believe, to a degree, it was created at some of the highest political levels for leveraging. And what they did, Deese, is they took two concepts and they tried to make them into the same, but also polarized. And the term was what you said, truths. And the other word is fact. So, and I pointed this out. I said a fact is a 100% irrefutable truth. It means it happened. You can't change it. It is set in stone for eternity.
Yeah, the sky is
blue. But I said, truths don't have to actually be facts. A truth is, like you said, your perception of it. And then it becomes a greater reality when you add a feeling, because feelings are like thoughts on steroids, that once you add the feeling component to a thought, that becomes your reality. And so then I heard one leader go on and on, that's my truth. That's what I perceive as the truth. Well, just because that's the truth, it doesn't make it right or a fact. And here's what gets really interesting, because I've done hypnosis for a very, very, very long time. I did stage hypnosis. I'd get up, I'd hypnotize people in an audience, or bring them up, hypnotize them on the stage or whatever. Even some folks in an audience. So if I hypnotized an individual and I made them believe that they're an alien and they're this and they're that, would we say yes or no? Is that truth or not truth? And the answer is what? No, they're not an alien, correct? They're right. Not from outer space.
Right.
Here's the interesting part, though. If I give them a post-hypnotic suggestion, Deese, to believe after I pull them out of the trance state that for the next 25 days or 30 days, they're going to 100% believe that they've been to Jupiter. That's where they were from originally. They came down to this earth. And I give them some scripts, post-hypnotic scripts, say about it. That's the reality. Now, under the trance state, I've actually demonstrated this. I brought in a leading polygrapher, which does polygraph testing for police, one of the best, and I demonstrated how under hypnosis a polygraph test could be beat. And the person beating the polygraph test, Deese, was actually lying, and they beat the test. At the end of the day, what is the moral of the story? If a person believes in something enough and it's supercharged with their emotions and their feelings, that is their 100% reality, and that is their factual life to them.
I think part of the problem is people have become sold on the idea that they have to have like this identity. Their ideas are their identities, right? As opposed to, I always look at things like any view that comes my way, I treat it like a center fielder, right? Like when it's coming off that bat, I'm not already leaning left when it's when the pitcher pitches it. You know, I'm standing in the middle, you know, kind of swaying, and whichever way the ball goes off that bat, that's the way I'm going. I'm not, if it hits right, I'm not going left. You know, I'm going to go, I'm waiting for the information to make a decision. And then upon new information down the road, I'm happy to adjust that and go the other way, you know. But I think people have become so bought and sold in these identities, which on a bigger picture, which this gets murky in a whole other conversation, I think has been purposely done by, elite oligarchs across the world to manipulate people into doing what they want them to do for their own, purpose of consolidating power. I think we've, the last couple weeks of these revelations in the Epstein files has solidified a lot of that. But it's just like, it's purposeful to get people to choose an identity and fracture into these identities and bicker amongst themselves, because that kind of keeps them busy, you know?
Oh, 100%. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've taught this. I saw through it when I was in university. I took a course in psychology of television and communication. And I remember my prof saying, how many of you people watch the news? Put your hands up. How many of you people watch this? And then she goes, how many of you people believe this? Believe what you wish? You know, we got our hands up. She goes, please put your bloody hands down. She goes, I'm going to teach you not to be dummies.
Yeah.
You're going to go and scrutinize stuff. And that's when I started to see through it. And I did a documentary called Lockstep and then a second one called Hooked. And I had Dr. Mark McDonald. He's one of your leading psychiatrists in California. And Mark said 17% of the population, no matter what you throw at them, they will see through it. Mm. And I was one of these ones that saw through a lot, especially in 2020 going forward, about, you know, this is a joke. Like, how are people buying a lot of this stuff? Like, are you step outside of yourself? And then to go back to what you were talking about, you can go back. If you just take the word television, break it down into three components. It's telling a vision. Tell a vision.
Right.
So society can tell you what they want you to see. And then what did you have? A remote to what? Change channels. What does a channel do? Channels into you what they want you to see. It's really that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it is that simple, which is funny because you would think more people would be able to get it. The craziest part to me is when I start breaking some of these things down to people or say these things that, you know, for someone who had never heard it would be very profound, you would think. Most of the time it's, crazy. And you're like, no, not crazy. Fucking crazy. Like, what do you, like, this should be like an atom bomb on your reality. And people, I think, just don't have the bandwidth to. It's easier to just kind of put the blinders on, keep marching down, doing what you're doing. Like, you know, you don't have to actually think about anything. You don't have to actually make choices. You're told what to like, what to watch, what to listen to, how to dress, who to hate, you know, who to like, what to say. And it's just an easy kind of checked out way of life.
I've asked people as a psychologist, and it's really funny because when I did these documentaries, and they won all around the world, and I've had leading experts in them. We looked at everything. We looked at education, entertainment, medicine. I had doctors blowing the whistles on different things. And it's right there. And the problem is, though, Dees, if you present people with it once again, if it goes against their construct, which is their reality and what they've been taught to believe and what they want to believe and also what they've stood up for, they're not, you could serve it up on a silver platter to them, but they'll just say, oh, okay.
Huh. Yeah.
What can I do about it now? Like, that's the best answer I've gotten other than, are you kidding me? I should, you know, when you're served with some of these truths and you're given them, you should be angry as hell. Like, all I know is if, from what I've seen so far with this Epstein stuff that's come out, my gosh, it's made me sick. I already knew some of the stuff from folks telling me stuff through the lot, you know, through the years.
Right.
And saying the worst, the people that think the worst of this stuff aren't even ready to see some of the worst of the worst because it'll devastate them.
Oh, right.
Even if they have the strength. And you hear stuff like that. And then what I've been seeing, and, you know, I've been having conversations with folks. These were the same people that were crying and upset. They wanted to see the Epstein files because why is so-and-so hiding them? They got nothing to hide. Put them out there. So now that they're out there, these same people, when you tell them what's in there, going, well, that's not true. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, you see what I mean, Dave? You can't have it both ways. But this is what we are in a society. We want the narrative that suits what we want to hear.
Yeah, I agree with. Why do you think that is? Because again, like I said, I personally approach everything like a sponge, ready to soak it up. You know, like a center fielder, ready to make a decision based on how the information I have, and ready to change that decision based on more information. You know, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. I'm willing to change my opinion. I'm willing to alter. You know, I'm not. None of my ideas are dried in cement. You know, which I think is, and this isn't me just tooting my own horn, I think it's a very healthy way to live. You know, because you're willing to take reality on reality's terms at that point. Why is it, do you think, so many people have a challenge doing that? Is it because of, you know, feeling accepted by the tribe? Is it because they want to feel secure in their thoughts? Is it because they can stop thinking about it once they've made a decision? You know, what do you think it is?
I like your analogy of the center fielder because that's the position I play. When I was younger, I thought I was going to play pro ball. I loved it. I was a really good center fielder. But I would, if I was to look at this, I would rather say an individual that takes a role of a quarterback, mm-hmm. because they need to read a defense. So if you're going to be an effectively great quarterback, you need to read a defense. And that means read through all of the smoke screens, everything.
Right, right.
All of the chaos. And then even that, you're going to read your receivers and you're going to do checkdowns. You're going to do screen passes. You're doing a whole bunch. That is an individual who is more proactive and active versus being passive. So when we look at this here, a lot of this has to do with schooling, which I was in school 10 years as a student, as a university student, 9 or 10 years, whatever that is, because I went back to do a second master's degree in theology because I was always interested in prophecies. Mm-hmm. Plus teaching. But one of the things that I've seen is too many students just are like sponges, passive. They take whatever they're told, they accept that. Rather right. than my students, I would say, go and challenge. If you disagree with something I'm saying, show me your way, show me a better way. And better still, as a professor, what makes me a better professor is when I have a student that enlightens me and can show me something I don't see in my blind spots.
Right, right.
So
right.
I become a better person. So at the end of the day, it's twofold. Part of it is the passivity. We just take in information all the time, and then we believe, okay, if we're the experts are telling us, the experts must know. But who are the experts? Well, it's the media nowadays. Well, really? Okay. Yeah. So they must know. And then on top of that, we can use Jack Nicholson's great line from A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And that's what it is, Deese. At the end of the day, so many of us have been spoon-fed information and a way of thinking for so long. We're accustomed to think that way. That when we're told to look the other way, it's like, I can't do that because I don't know how. Or right. And part of it is the truth is going to hurt worse than more than the lies that I've been led to believe and the lies I live by.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, it's easier to just keep the blinders on and then you don't have to face the ugly reality around you, you know, which I think it's like Now, you're probably aware, I'm sure you're aware of this with, you know, all your schooling and what you did for a living. But, you know, the brain processes so much out of what you see in a day because it processes things out that, like, you wouldn't be able to handle. You know, it's like in trauma situations in PTSD, why your brain, like, you know, if in extreme trauma situations, people's memory is essentially not reliable at all because your brain is doing the best to protect yourself, right? Trying to be like, ooh, control alt delete that, control alt delete to make sure you can make it through the day. And I think that's a lot of like what happens to people in these situations. They just be like, well, you know, to admit that my whole government is run by satanic pedophile elites that eat babies is a lot to unpack, you know? So maybe I'll just pretend like I don't really know that. And then I can still, you know, get my Frappuccino from Starbucks in the morning and watch Friends for the 18th time through when I get home and just call it good, you know?
I agree 100% what you're saying, because I think if you go even at a deeper level, so let's say I'm one of these ones that has been oblivious and naive to everything. And Deese, you're telling me this, you're going, Peter, this is what it's all about. You know, there's been all this stuff, you know, that has been told to us for years and years and years that it's real. It really is real. My response then would be okay, I'm going to go get my special latte to the nines, and I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to ponder what you just told me for a minute, Deese, or two. But the more I ponder it, it gets extremely upsetting to me.
Right.
Because at a deep level, at a conscious level, it's trying and disruptive to me and frustrating and upsetting. But at a deep level, it's devastating because what it does is it challenges my entire existence for who I am. Yeah. And what I am based on what I've been told and what I have chosen to do over my life. That deep down, am I worried or afraid that I have been living a life of an imposter as some sort of cosplay character on this giant video game or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah.
And this has been nothing more than cosplay at a Comic-Con, and I've been a participant in it, and none of it has been real. And then I got to wake up to this and realize it was all fake. And 30, 40, 50 years, however old I am, has been a complete waste. I've been shamed. And how do I get my life back? So you know what's better, Deese? Just to enjoy this latte and maybe have a biscotti with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like that scene in The Matrix, which, you know, is becoming more and more real all the time. You know, blue pill or the red pill. It's like if you take the blue pill, you will, you know, be out of the Matrix and you'll know all the truths of reality. If you take the red pill, you go back inside the Matrix. You'll never remember any of this. And, you know, you can go have a steak tomorrow night for dinner. It's like, what do you choose? So, yeah, man, I don't know. Maybe they're living a better life.
but you volleyed this and set it up right from the get-go when we were talking about it, that the easiest way always is immediate and instant gratification. And I believe to a great degree we've been conditioned to accept instantaneous gratification.
Oh, yeah.
And this, at the end of the day, you just nailed it again. I'd rather have my steak. I would rather, you know, continue to be blue-pilled and believe I am actually merely at some level enjoying life, whatever life I've been convinced to believe that I'm having, versus having to either come to the realization that I merely exist or I need to endure. So we have three ways of living our lives. We can either enjoy it, we can endure it, or we can exist in it. Yeah. And I think if the realities come out, Deese, we get the latter two.
Yeah. Yep. It's a challenging thing. And I don't know. It's difficult every day for me to deal with people, I guess, because I just don't know how to. It's like I'm losing. I don't know how to communicate with people anymore on just like so like the Olympics, huh? You know, it's like I don't know how to even give a shit about regular stuff anymore. It's tough. But Peter, I feel like we could talk about this all day. We should have you back on. We could talk about a lot. We barely even scratched the surface. We do have to. I got to get out of here in a second. But before we go, we do have one quick segment we do with our guests. What I do with my guests is I write jokes every week because that's what I do for a living. So I write jokes for my guests if you want to participate in this. So I give them three options. There is a family friendly, there is a spicy, and then there's a I'm going to get canceled joke. Which category are you feeling?
Well, I had Vietnamese for supper. I did not put any hot sauce in my pho. Let's go with the spicy.
We'll go with the spicy. Okay. Okay, here we go. Let's see. I'm going to send it to you in the chat, and then we're just going to let you deliver this joke. Hold on. It's going to go, actually, sorry, it's going to go to your, I'm going to send it to you on Facebook here. I can't put it in the chat for some reason. So, all right, there you go. And we'll let this is your it's pretty tame, but this is have you ever told any stand-up comedy? Have you done any stand-up comedy, Peter? You're a man of many talents.
I've been told by many years of students that my lectures were oftentimes like a stand-up comedy club. Okay, so it's been a turbulent first year of this administration, but I think we can all agree the worst thing that's happened is Ellen DeGeneres moving back to America.
There you go, Peter. Fantastic. I love it. see, that wasn't so bad. The little spicy isn't that bad, although sometimes it does get a little spicier than that. So
I got to admit, I've never watched her, but, you know, I always say, leave people off better than you find them, and that means respect them for who they are, what their choices are. Yeah. And I really do, for the most part. I try my best to love everyone. I know I don't like everyone, but at the end of the day, I try to love everybody, because I know that somebody's son, daughter, mother, father, and uncle, they belong to somebody, and we have to respect their choices. We may not agree with them, but at the end of the day, respect them.
I know a comedian who worked for Ellen for years, was a producer and head writer on the show. And this is a great comic who's worked 30, 40 year comic. He's Emmy Award winning comedian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And nicest guy you'll ever meet. And he said she is just awful. He's like, she is the most vile human he has ever met in his life. You know, he actually broke an NDA talking shit about her because he's like, she's just so bad. She's just awful to everyone, belittling to everyone. And so, yeah, that was enough for me to be like, all right, you know, I always said anyone who dances that much is hiding something. You know, she danced a lot, Cosby danced a lot, you know, Rosie O'Donnell, all these people who are very, very angry deep down and do very horrible things, always dancing to make you think they're happy, and then it's like, what are you hiding? Why are you pretending you're so happy?
Yeah, it's too bad that people are what they are, you know. But it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. Well, Peter, thank you very much. Tell everyone where they can find you, how they can follow you, any books, films, anything you want to get some eyes on so we can
get them your way. Actually, if you go to my website, which is PeterAndrewSacco, SACCO.com, I've got books on there you can download. I do a lot of stuff as an anti-bullying advocate. Nobody on this earth should be bullied. Man, woman, child, anybody. Yeah. I've got books that you can download for free, even for seniors. And also, one of my whole careers I had fun with was hosting a couple different haunted TV series. I had a blast doing them. You can download free books on that. And you can also check out videos and movies that I've done on Historical Niagara TV show, which is on YouTube.
Okay. Cool, guys. Well, check it out. Follow Peter. Check out his website. Check out all his work. He's got a ton of different stuff you can get into, whether books, film, etc. So give it a whirl, guys. And again, as for me, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows across the country coming towards you. And Kill Stan at number 4 coming in hot. So follow that so you can get updates and get that early release when that comes out. So that's it, guys. For the Social Hour, I've been Deese. And for Peter, thank you very much. And we will see you all.